We haven't really seen any drawn out corrections. They're more like drive-by shootings, and then it shoots right back up. So it'll be interesting to see what the follow-through is like tomorrow.
Well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcadia Economics. And fortunately, it is that time of the week once again, which I know we skipped last week, although we were giving Mr. Scheckman a rare week off as he had busy week. And Andy Jim Willie also filled in for you, playing the role of Andy Scheckman last week. And certainly he had quite a lot to say about the gold and silver rally, which unfortunately, as we're recording Monday afternoon, has taken a slight detour, although I'm personally not all that upset about it. I think keeping these things in perspective, you get 450 bucks in gold in the span of a couple months will probably lead to something like we see here, where about 3 o'clock on Monday, down $72, which is one of the bigger ones I remember, even for the last couple of years. But to dig into that, we'll also get a look at what people are doing as well as the premium levels. So, Andy, with that said, welcome in. How are you today?
I'm good, Chris. Good to see you, buddy. Yeah, I mean, from a lot of perspectives, this correction, which from a percentage point of view, 3%, yeah, I mean, it's a big dollar drop, but it's long overdue. You could say it was in many respects very much overbought. And the commercial banks had a fairly significant short position that was costing them an awful lot of money. So to see this happen, to see it engineered low enough to, trigger some of the selling by the funds doesn't surprise me at all. Puts the commercial banks who would be buying the other end of those sold positions in a much stronger position. And again, the market needs to breathe. And I think you see greater volatility anytime you get into a market that is like this, one that certainly has done very, very well. And typically when you see big moves in a market, they are preceded and accompanied with great volatility. This is no different, and especially now with such high stakes with the meeting in October for the BRICS and the election in November and all of the things that seem to be happening. You knew that there would have to be a line in the sand drawn, show a little bit of strength. But if it's anything like what we've seen recently, regardless of its size and its scope, one would expect it to fight back pretty strongly here soon. We haven't really seen any drawn out corrections. They're more like drive-by shootings, and then it shoots right back up. So it'll be interesting to see what the follow-through is like tomorrow. I'm guessing that we'll see it move back up probably as soon as it hits Asia later on this evening. This is a New York COMEX-based clubbing, and I'm not really upset by it either. Quite to the contrary, I think it's needed, and certainly, probably, arguably, makes the market fundamentals stronger moving forward.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And like you mentioned, it will be interesting to see what the next couple of hours and days hold. We did have that big Friday sell-off a week and a half ago, which was encouraging to see things strengthen. And I guess prices stayed mostly the same the following week. But I've had several days over this rally where we'd see a sell-off, and especially some of those ones where there was quite a reversal. While you were talking, I did pull up the COT report here, and one area that people often look at is Green Line down here. That is the swap dealers, and you can see shortest they've been over the past couple of years. Here is the total commercial position, which on the lower end of that range, and probably
Definitely.
had a lot to do with what we are seeing today. Yet, with that said, Andy, you did mention the election, and let's phrase this appropriately, just some commentary. Yet, I keep continuing to come across things like this. Politico says Trump trade advisors plot dollar devaluation. We've also had Judy Shelton tweeting out pieces about the gold standard. I think it might be a bit premature to say, well, if Trump comes back in, we will see a return to the gold standard, but obviously, I know you're out there golfing with Trump here and there, so you guys are tight. And Any thoughts on some of these comments that we've seen here? And actually, if there's one more thing I can include there, a lot of the people I talk to in gold and silver space, there's a fair amount of them who seem to be suggesting or thinking that we're closer to a reset. I'm not quite sure I've seen enough to go that far. I guess that's always possible at any time, but any thoughts on some of the things that we are hearing from the Trump side leading into the election, which now getting closer?
Yeah, well, I think if Trump doesn't win, you'll see Lael Brainard as the head of the Fed, who is a modern monetary theorist who helped develop the CBDC with MIT, who ran point for FedNow. And on the other end, you have Judy Shelton, who is the opposite end of the spectrum. She wants to bring back a gold standard. And certainly, I think that regardless of how this all plays out, in order for a system to have any credibility moving forward, it needs to have some sort of a peg. And we've talked about this before. Even Kristalina Georgieva, the head of the IMF, said a CBDC that is not pegged to something is fiat. And I keep going back to gold being the only other tier one reserve asset, as mentioned by the Bank of International Settlements. I keep looking at all the gold that not only has been purchased by all the central banks, but also repatriated. And interestingly enough, even through a Freedom of Information Act, we're not finding out how much gold has left the Fed, who's been bringing it home, and why don't they want to tell us? So yeah, I mean, and if you look at the strength of the dollar, it's crippling a lot of countries right now. The strength of the dollar, it's very unusual. Even though the people in this country have seen their purchasing power get clobbered through inflation, the strength of the dollar around the world is outpacing much of that inflation. And it's making it very, very hard for a lot of these countries to purchase commodities that are valued in dollars. And, a lot of people think it's because of all the dollar-denominated debt creating the demand for dollars to pay back the debt. And maybe that's the case. This is a short-term strength of the dollar, as far as I am in concerned. And I can tell you that much of the world would really like a dollar that isn't as strong as it is right now. And George Gammon did a very interesting podcast on this very topic recently, talking about how many, many countries are really struggling under the strength of a dollar. And that strength is completely and totally unjustified, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, how can it be justified when we are witnessing record debt accumulation, $1 trillion every 3 months, where we're a country that, it's 175 trillion in the hole. And I was looking at something the other day, 77 trillion underfunded in Social Security, Medicare Part B being the largest liability, underfunded by 99.5 trillion, Medicaid D or Medicare D, which is for prescription drugs, missing 22.1 trillion. And, we're a country where, here again, $8.9 trillion in government debt, or 25% of all the outstanding debt that's on balance sheet anyway, pretty damn close to it, has to be refinanced at much higher rates over the next 12 months. And, when you see countries like China selling treasuries and buying gold, things are changing. And I think gold is being remonetized in the world's view. And maybe this is why it was reclassified tier one. Certainly, there's been a lot of a talk, and certainly you and I have talked about it a lot, that, and you hear Vince talking about, a lot of people talking about, that gold, because it carries no counterparty risk, because it's outperformed the bond market, is being looked at as a substitute to the bond market. I believe that. I really do believe that. And so I think the world is looking at gold a little bit differently now than it has been perceived for quite some time, and will have a very pivotal role moving forward. And certainly, if Judy Shelton gets in behind Trump and is the head of the Fed, and they move in that direction, it is a massive step in the right direction to gain credibility that we seem to be squandering more and more and more every single day. The latest being, we talked about, certainly Iran has been sanctioned, and Russia and the weaponizing of the dollar. We talked about, you sent me the article actually, about China being threatened with sanctions if they aid Russia in any way whatsoever in terms of the military. Forget about the fact that they're allies. we can aid the Ukraine, but they can't aid Russia. And Janet said this in a CNBC interview last week. I mean, that's from the too stupid to be stupid category. And now we just see it again here just the other day. We are now threatening Pakistan with sanctions if it builds a pipeline to import gas from Iran. I mean, I think it's getting old with a lot of these countries. And so the realization that holding dollars, the de-dollarization and treasuries, the de-treasurization, if you will, is something they need to do to, you know, to give themselves some form of protection from what they believe is a hypocritical administration doing all they can to, you know, impose their rules. And if you don't align ideologically or step out of line, well, you know, it's bad enough to sanction. Now they're talking of confiscation, which is a line that I don't think you ever come back from. So yeah, I think there would be an appetite, at least depending upon how things get, for a return to sound money, for a return to sanity. And Judy Shelton would be just the person to usher that in.
Well, yes. And one other thing that you mentioned in there that seems like we're taking a step closer towards, unfortunately, Congress passes a bill that could unlock billions in frozen Russian assets. So now moving a little bit further in motion, of course, at the same time, passes $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting comment. They just voted to borrow another $100 billion. They're actively and intentionally fueling inflation. They don't care that you know. They don't care that you oppose it. They don't care at all. And meanwhile, that's happening while the CIA is reportedly warning Zelensky to stop stealing so much money. So maybe shouldn't be laughing or smiling. I mean, that's tragic in its own right. Yet a lot of the things that we've been talking about seemingly taking things a step closer. And here was Tom Luongo talking about seizing Russian forex reserves, by far the biggest mistake of the war by the U.S., and obviously something that you've commented on quite a bit. And yeah, when you see that's potentially being applied to China and other places, perhaps that's why in that World Bank report, where they were writing their asset manager's guidebook for investing in gold, I was trying to pull that up in the background, but there was one of the highlights there where they were talking about the benefit of not having any counterparty risk. And certainly it doesn't seem like maybe for gold heading in the right direction for the world and the state of affairs in the world, certainly does not seem to be heading in an optimal path.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought a bunch of this up because it dovetails into what I want to talk about. But in terms of the Ukraine, we've given them since February of 2022 over $200 billion in aid. And I'm going to read to you something from Rand Paul. He says, Ukrainian flags fly in the chamber of the United States House of Representatives as they vote to send more of your hard-earned money to a corrupt foreign regime. And just like that, they shout, Ukraine, Ukraine, while happily working to secure Ukraine's borders, but not ours, where we've let 12 million people into this country illegally. And you know, $5 billion to fix a border wall was outrageous, but $200 billion to a war we should have nothing to do with is okay. And while we let our infrastructure and our border fall apart, it's just absolutely crazy. But so is what I'm about to tell you. And I'm dead serious on this. I have a big shout out to my friend Mark Moss, who opened my eyes to something. And just the other day, he did a video on this, and I started to research, and I'm so blown away, I can't even tell you, because it fits like a hand in glove on the things that I've been talking about. And what makes it even more interesting is that this all centers around Columbia University right now, anyways, and you know all the stuff that's going on at Columbia right now, where you know our institutions of higher learning, even those that are considered, you know, to be Ivy League, have lost their bearings, have lost their mind. And for those people who don't know, listen to these names that went to Columbia, because it's going to be very important as I read to you about what I want to talk to you about. Barack Obama, our current Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, Bill Barr and Eric Holder, the former attorney generals, Madeleine Albright, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, and drumroll, Jared Bernstein. Jared Bernstein, the lead economic advisor to the United States government, who advocates for losing the dollar's reserve status. Remember, we've talked ad nauseum about the weaponizing of the dollar, the ramifications that has, and the ramifications of going green as it relates not to the ecology, but to Saudi Arabia and our petrodollar status and OPEC. All of that stuff, Jared Bernstein, he's the architect of it largely, but all these people went to Colombia. Now, what I want people to look up, and I'm going to read some of this stuff to you, but there is something called the Cloward-Piven theory that was taught at Columbia. And Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven were two professors who taught at Columbia University. And so all of these people who are center to policy are Columbia grads. Now, the whole theory of the Cloward-Piven strategy is to overwhelm the United States economy to create a systemic failure, destroying capitalism and our country from within. The primary objective of the strategy is to create chaos with the hopes of destroying America's capitalist economy and replacing it with a socialist system that includes guaranteed incomes, a massive drive to recruit the poor onto the welfare rolls. The point of surging welfare claims is to enroll as many individuals as it takes to send the United States into an economic crisis. Now think of the 12 million illegal immigrants here. That certainly does the trick. They estimate currently that 63% of non-US citizens are actively accessing one or more forms of taxpayer-funded welfare, where comparatively, just 35% of US households receive some form of welfare. So almost double the amount of people who are illegally in this country. Cloward and Piven specifically mentioned targeting America's large cities for their colossal welfare push. Now think about how all this is happening. A series of welfare drives in large cities, we believe, impel action on a new federal program to distribute income. In their blueprints, Cloward and Piven revealed that the best way to achieve their goals is to create a new loyal voting bloc out of the rapidly increasing number of welfare recipients. According to them, if organizers can deliver millions of cash in benefits to the ghetto masses, it seems reasonable to expect that the masses will deliver their loyalty to their benefactors. With a record level of illegal immigration through their complicity in the border crisis, this is left aiming to develop arms of loyal serfs who will work to destroy America, whether knowingly or unknowingly. According to the Cloward-Piven theory, they insist that the intentional destruction of America's major systems will compel the federal government to develop a communist universal basic income program. They both agree that the mainstream media, both Cloward and Piven agree that the mainstream media would be a critical role in their organized attack against America. To quote Cloward and Piven, as the crisis develops, it will be important to use the mass media to inform the broader liberal community about the inefficiencies and injustices of welfare. So if I want people to download this or just Google Cloward-Piven theory, and everything that they are doing is happening right now. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen, and it couldn't be drawn up any better. And you look at Biden, you know, he's not pulling the strings. I mean, a lot of people think it's Obama. Jared Bernstein, very influential in I think, losing the reserve status by our stupidity abroad. And the theory that they were all taught at Columbia is playing out right in front of us. You mentioned a lot of these things. They're doing it right in front of you right now. But that's exactly what they're doing. They are overwhelming the system by all of the money that needs to be paid to make the system work. It blows up the system from within. And I think if people read it and reread it two or three times, they will absolutely be shocked by what they see. It's almost like you can't make it up. And this while you got $1.1 trillion in credit card debt, $17.3 trillion in household debt, and all of the stuff we talked about in underfunding in Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, where we've already paid almost $525 billion in interest payments alone this year. You know, a system where China is selling treasuries and the U.S. government is supposedly doing the same thing also as they normalize their balance sheet. So, you know, who's going to buy the $10 trillion in bonds in 2024 that need to be purchased? And, you know, what's really crazy about that is that if you talk about, as you mentioned, the 2025 balance sheet proposal budget, where all of that debt, you know, you're talking almost $11 trillion a year in bonds that need to be sold on through 2030. You know, who's going to buy it if China's not and the Fed's not? Who's going to buy them? It becomes very, very compelling. One of the things that Jim Willie said on your show that I thought was very interesting and makes a hell of a lot of sense is that the U.S. is paying money under the table to Great Britain, you know, to be the number two largest holder of treasuries. And just like, you know, we believe that Ireland and the Cayman Islands are filling these roles, we're witnessing the beginnings of you know, monetization of assets, monetization of debt that leads to hyperinflation. And, you know, if you read this deal and think about it for a moment, you couldn't draw it up any better. That's exactly what they were talking about. Let all these people in, overwhelm the big cities, have massive entitlement programs, and create a whole legion of voters that will never vote to have that meal ticket taken from them. It's diabolical. It's scary as hell. And I urge everyone to Google and read the Cloward-Piven strategy. It'll blow your mind, as I think as it did mine.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And certainly covering silver and some of the things that go on in the government, there's times where I try to be really careful not to go too far down the conspiracy path when not supported with evidence, although certainly that thing with the event 201 ahead of COVID a couple of years ago was eye-opening, and you wonder sometimes what is actually being planned behind the scenes. And I mean, Klaus Schwab is out there saying the things that he says and does. So
there is a very fine line, brother. And if anyone knows this, it's you talking to Jim Willie, who's been right a lot between conspiracy and reality. I mean, you know, yeah, I get it. You don't want to cite things as fact. I get it. But what's interesting, if you read the Cloward-Piven strategy and then think about it for a moment and look at it in terms of what's happened to this country in the last 2 years, I will ask anyone to come back and read that and come back next week and refute it. Say that, well, yeah, but you read it and you tell me, holy crap, that's exactly what they're doing. Now, is it conspiratorial? Maybe. Is it backed by any hard evidence? No. You know, was it specifically taught to Obama and to, you know, all of the other people in you know, high levels of government that I mentioned that went to Columbia? Don't know. But I can tell you that it was originally taught by these two professors at Columbia. And it's just ironic that their entire theory seems to be happening and unfolding right out in front of us right now. And they don't even care. You know, I mean, just to see half of the, just to see all of the, you know, the Senate cheering for the 60 more billion that they've given to the Ukraine. It's just absolutely insane as this country is falling apart and we're borrowing that money to give it to them. I mean, it's like from the too stupid to be stupid category. We're broke. We're borrowing money just to pay the interest on our debt. And yet we feel that we should borrow more money and give it to these countries only to piss off their foes more and more and more and make the rest of the world see, you know, oh, okay, they'll either sanction you or give you money that they borrow. They're a paper tiger. They're broke. They're insolvent. And they're hypocritical. And I just, you know, the more you see this stuff, the more you scratch your head. I can't believe some of the things I see. And in particular, the actions by our leaders and the joy of giving away our money and indebting our children and grandchildren forever is just beyond me. So, you know, maybe they'll pull out that Treasury clause that allow, or the Federal Reserve clause that allows them to remonetize the price of gold, and this will all go away. Until then, we are a country that's literally lost its mind from within by allowing this stuff to happen. And instead of fixing our infrastructure and getting our borders in order, we give it to a war. We've given $200 billion to these people, and there's no congressional oversight. We don't even know where it's gone. Who's spending it? And now they're, you know, giving missiles and all this kind of stuff. It's just, it's insanity to me. So I think it's worth mentioning. You know, when people look at this and say, how can this be happening? You have to ask yourself, you know, conspiracy or reality? Is it too stupid to be stupid? Could it be intended? Is this what they're trying to do? If not, we need a change in Washington very, very, very badly and very quickly.
Well, I would summarize that. What I'm taking away here is I think you're saying that we need Jim Willie for president, secretary, treasurer, and Fed chairman to wrap this mess up, unfortunately. And my favorite part of Jim last week was when he was screaming and said, "We need rate hikes and rate cuts. The Fed needs hikes and cuts," which I guess it really does summarize their position rather eloquently.
Yeah, I mean, they're painted into a corner and the whole world knows it. I mean, at least the people that are paying attention.
So, in either case, before we start wrapping up here, Andy, did want to find out any changes on the premiums as we are in the midst of a lot of volatility, mostly towards the upside, but I don't know if things changed on Monday at all as the prices have come down, but anything you could share in terms of what's happening with premiums and also how people have been responding so far?
It's interesting. The only change in premiums we've seen are really in the American Gold and the American Silver Eagle. There's still great demand for them. And, nothing else really has spiked yet, but I would argue that's a precursor, the Gold and Silver Eagle. The premiums are still very low. You got guys all over the place like Ted Butler screaming about the shortages in industrial bars around the world, and the deliveries off of all of the exchanges and all of the things that we're seeing that point to a shortage, it is not happening in the retail market yet. With the sell-offs and the ETFs, I said that to Bill Holter, by the way, our mutual friend. I said, Bill, you look at the ETFs and the drawdowns out of them while the price has been going up is crazy. He says, but how much of that was share redemption where big money is redeeming their shares in an opaque fashion rather than delivery off of COMEX. And he's got a point. Maybe it is. Whatever it is, it sure looks like when you look at the ETFs and when you look at the public participation, who has been enamored with, and rightfully so, with great performance in NVIDIA and all AI and Bitcoin and all of these things that have really taken the limelight away from gold. It's the tortoise, not the hare. The performance of gold has been nothing short of extraordinary, let alone or take away the $61 drop in gold. I see it's come up a little bit here right now, but it's up considerably, several hundred dollars in a very short period of time. And silver and its percentage gain finally, over the last week or two has started to show just how strong that volatility can be on the upside too. So it's real, but the public isn't noticing it yet. And you compare it with what's happening in China, their ETF numbers are off the chart. They've triggered stops in their ETF market because the demand is so high that it forces, breakers to shut down. And the demand in many parts of the world is insatiable. Here in the United States, they're missing it. And I look at it as a huge contrarian indicator. If prices keep rising in the face of positive real returns and a strong dollar and a public that's really not involved, arguably at a one of the lowest levels I can ever imagine in a market that's showing this kind of strength, what does it mean? Does it portray for much higher prices? I guess we will see. But the fundamentals that we're talking about, debt and all the geopolitical stuff and all the stuff that's going on here leading up to arguably the biggest election of our lives and the big meeting in October, the BRICS. I mean, you would think that it would demand far greater attention, but the fact that it's not, to me, I almost find comforting in a strange sort of way. I guess we'll have to see, only time will tell. But yeah, premiums are only on the silver and gold eagles have come up. Everything else, status quo, still very, very cheap in my mind.
Alrighty, and anything on special while the premiums are low?
We have backdate silver Maple Leafs at $3.25 over spot, and constitutional silver coins, dimes, and quarters at 2.75 over spot. The Maple Leafs were $8, $9 over spot most of the last 3 years. Junk silver was as high as double digit over, $12, $13, $14. Are we going to get there again? I'm not saying that. I would think we will. I would think when the public wakes up to whatever event it is that wakes them up, a bank crisis or anything. I wouldn't even have to go down the road of possibilities what could trigger a big run. But as Rick Rule has said for a very long time, the entire allocation of interest in the United States in metals is one half of 1% across the whole spectrum. So You know, if 5%, if people owned a 5% allocation, that's a tenfold increase in demand. It's unsustainable just to get to a 5% in a market where it has shown incredible strength. But yet things like AI and Bitcoin have stolen the show, right or wrong. I guess only time will tell. But yeah, I would expect premiums to go back up. And they're very, very low at these levels, not much above what they were most of my career, which, you know, didn't exhibit anything like the demand we're seeing right now.
Well, I hear you. And if people want to take advantage of any of those specials, you can contact us at arcadia@milesfranklin.com. Well, the premiums are on the lower side. And Andy, I appreciate everything that you shared there today. Good to catch back up with you as always. And yeah, a lot happening quickly. And I imagine there will be an escalation of that to a degree as we get closer to the election. Actually, in some ways, it seemed even more quiet this year than in some of the past election years, but I'm sure that will be changing and there will be plenty to keep track of. So we'll look forward to picking this back up again next week. And thanks again for being here. And I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good, my man. I look forward to seeing you then as well. You take care.
Well, thank you, Andy, as always, for today's report. Good to have him back on the show after a week off last week, and hopefully enjoyed that one at home, found it helpful in terms of getting an idea of some of the things that are going on. Before we wrap up, I did want to thank First Majestic Silver, who brought us today's show and had a key development in the past couple of weeks as they've identified a new water source at La Encantada. The lack of water there had slowed down the processing rates at the plant, led to a higher all-in sustaining cost, although they have identified a water source and are expecting throughput rates to return to targeted levels of 3,000 tons per day by the third quarter of 2024. So that was a big thing on their list to get taken care of this year, and they've made some progress there. And just wanted to pass that along. Hope you're having a great day out there, and I'll look forward to seeing you again tomorrow.